Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. The American Academy of Pediatrics has reminded us with this quote. He says, the internet is a rewarding place for both kids and teens, but the potential risks for their privacy and personal safety are very real. While surfing the web, your children may stumble on disturbing information or images, or they may innocently accept or share files that could expose your family to internet thieves or computer viruses. They may encounter cyber bullies who try to embarrass or intimidate them, and even worse, your children may unknowingly communicate with child predators who use the internet to befriend vulnerable children and pretending to be another child or a trustworthy adult, and then persuade them to meet them in person. On this edition of Line One, we're going to be discussing these warnings with Lieutenant Kevin Vandegriff and Officer Angie Fraze of the Anchorage Police Department, the Cyber Crimes Division. If you've got questions or comments during the next hour or so, let me tell you how you can get a hold of us. In Anchorage, our local number is 550-8433, 550-8433, our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752, and during the next hour, you can also reach us by email at line1, and please spell that out, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, line1@alaskapublic.org. Welcome to Line 1 to both of you. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
We've not done this program. I've been doing this close to, I think, 20 years now, and this is a first time for this. And I was trying to think about how we could get into it, and one of the ways it dawned on me is that, like everything else, crime is, I assume, changing. I would think 25 years ago there was no cyber crimes division in the Anchorage Police Department, and we hardly heard much about it. So can I ask, Kevin, let me ask you, what's changed in your experience with crime over the last 25 years ago? Can you put that in some perspective for
us? Sure. You know, the internet essentially has become a part of all of our lives. I mean, we communicate on the internet. We have, all of us probably own a couple of devices. I would say every household probably owns a half dozen or more. And probably in the last 15 years or so, because the internet impacts all of our lives, it impacts the lives of criminals as well, or the criminal element. And so the internet has become a part of pretty much every crime that we investigate. So if you talk about, for example, somebody who used to steal cars and they would take it to a chop shop and they would cut up the parts and they would sell them to their friends that they knew and they'd make a profit. Well, now they do that, but they do it on the internet. And so mm-hmm. they can sell it worldwide, and mm-hmm. it becomes a more efficient business proposition for them. So if you can imagine that every type of crime that law enforcement has to investigate is impacted by the internet. So if you have a suspect who's committed a violent crime, we know that we can probably get good information from the electronic devices that they have that communicate with the internet. Sometimes they use it for research prior to committing a crime. Sometimes they use it to communicate with co-conspirators in a crime. So if you can just imagine how it impacts our own lives, mm-hmm. it impacts the lives of folks and the criminal element as well.
Mm-hmm. This whole issue of privacy you bring up, and I'm going to ask it because I'm so interested in medicine, I don't follow the politics and the national side of this, but what's the big privacy issues? What are enforcement agencies allowed to do with looking at what other people are doing? You said you can look at what's happening. Is that all after the fact when you're trying to get information, or are there times when you can proactively begin to trace something that somebody might be doing on the internet?
A lot of it is after the fact. Many times law enforcement has been getting involved in proactive type investigations, but that usually leads from a tip from an internet service provider or mm-hmm. a concerned citizen who's seen something online that they're concerned about, and they make a report, mm-hmm. and then we do follow up on that. Law enforcement also conducts undercover stings mm-hmm. online to specifically targeting child predators or prostitution rings or drug rings mm-hmm. By assuming the persona of either children or adults engaged in that type of activity.
Okay. So to really get on before and look at somebody's records or what they're doing on the internet before might require a subpoena, I guess. Is that the right term?
It depends on the jurisdiction
okay.
In the country. but most of the times, yes, or a search warrant. Some information, subscriber information, is available to us simply because of the disclaimer that everybody clicks on when they sign up for something,
okay.
And they don't read the fine details.
Okay.
So,
all right. So, tell us a little bit about the cyber crimes division. Obviously, it's suddenly, in my mind, much bigger than what I thought it was, since almost all crime may have something to do with cyber crimes now, or something to do with the internet.
It does. At the Anchorage Police Department, we have a lieutenant, soon to have a sergeant, three detectives, and two civilian technicians, forensic technicians, that are currently working in that section. A large amount of the work that they do is examining digital storage devices as we investigate homicides or robberies or sexual assaults, any type of felony violent crimes. They spend a lot of time doing that. We do have the capability to do some proactive work against child predators and have had a great deal of success there. And they tend to spend a lot of time, unfortunately, dealing with child pornography that's discovered on devices. So and when I say that, they're forensically recovering that information from digital storage devices, of which there's a proliferation now, as you know, in the last 5 or 10 years. Digital storage has grown tremendously and become very simplistic. So now you can have, you know, a flash drive in your pocket that's, you know, 60 gigabytes, where you couldn't get a hard drive like that 20 years ago in your home computer.
Mm-hmm. Angie, let me bring you into this. Let me ask you how you got trained into this. Is it specific training for this, or is that something that may come later after you have some experiences?
So I'm not in the cybercrimes unit, but I was a regular patrol officer for about 8 years. So my connection with cybercrimes is just really from the street level, and then also as a parent. So when we're called out to, you know, calls for service from citizens concerned. They've found something on their computer. Maybe a teenage daughter or son has been engaged in a relationship on the internet, and now tickets are purchased or someone's showing up at their doorstep is sort of how I've gotten involved in these cases. So just people calling in to 911 or on the non-emergency line to say they have an issue, and then they're directed to a police officer. And then we work with the cybercrimes unit to look at those devices, maybe taking custody of a computer, getting a search warrant, and sort of tracking down just the elements of the crime and that how that goes through the process.
And while I got you, then you're also a mother, you said before we, so you're approaching or already into this issue about safety for kids and adolescents.
Yep. I have a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I actually just recently purchased a new router because my 10-year-old has friends over. They use the internet on their iPods, and they're not quite to the level with cell service, so they're just using those devices at home. And, you know, just going through that process of going through the phone, what do they have access to? I've gotten through the parental restrictions and turned off the internet. As you know, when you're searching the internet, anything can pop up. So get that turned off, but then they still have access to, you know, Instagram, downloading apps. So I have a lot of parent restrictions put on those iTouches, and then also that router that can turn off at 10 p.m. so they're not in their bedrooms on the internet and things like that. There's some interesting software out there.
Let me just remind listeners once again as we get the program underway, we're talking about primarily internet safety as it involves children and adolescents. My guests today are Lieutenant Kevin Vandergriff and Officer Angie Fraze. They're both of the APD. Kevin, you're with Cybercrimes Division specifically.
That's correct. And part of my position is the commander of the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force for the whole state of Alaska.
Okay.
So it's a little bit different hat. And I'll just briefly explain what that means. The Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force is a federally funded effort, actually very forward thinking, because the proliferation of computer devices in our lives these types of crimes can occur anywhere in our country. So small jurisdictions of, you know, departments with 4 or 5 officers all the way up to the largest jurisdictions, well, obviously, a smaller department might not have the funding to investigate those types of crimes because they're very tech heavy, so very expensive to get the software, get your officers trained, keep your software licenses up to date, and get the types of training you need to prosecute those types of cases. So the Alaska Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force receives funding from the federal government, And as part of the commander's duties, it is to try and get training throughout the entire state. And so what we work hard to do is bring training to the state of Alaska or send individual officers out of state to get this training with this funding they give us, and to try to set up different law enforcement agencies throughout the state with the equipment and training necessary to investigate and to prosecute these types of crimes.
Okay. Let me take 1 second. When I was introducing everyone again, I forgot to give everybody a phone number. So if you've got questions or comments about what you're hearing today, our local number, again, 550-8433, 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. So, Lieutenant Vandergrift, when I was kind of looking into this again on the internet, I saw that there was a big national training facility outside of Birmingham, the National Computer Forensics Institute. Is that something that you guys get trained in, or somebody here, or is that something completely different? Have you heard of that?
I'm not personally aware of law enforcement utilizing that facility, okay. But I am aware of it.
All right. So what kinds of crimes are you primarily? You've mentioned this child predator situation. What are the other things that you guys get involved in most commonly?
Most commonly is child pornography and online enticement of minors. We also investigate complaints from citizens, largely concerned parents, that their children are sending nude images of themselves to others. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those images are used to bully those young folks. Mm-hmm. We get involved in those types of investigations. Mm-hmm. We spend a lot of time completing forensic examinations on cell phones that are seized as part of other criminal investigations. So just a whole gamut, if you can imagine any type of digital storage media that might be related to a crime, this unit gets involved and does that, does the work.
Angie, do you mind sharing with us perhaps an experience or something you've had as an officer? You said you're on the street, so you just get calls about situations, just so our listeners can get some idea of fairly typical involvement in internet crimes that you get involved in.
Yeah, sure. What Lieutenant Vandergrift said about how things have changed is really true from the patrol level, because the internet really is involved in almost every aspect of crimes that we investigate, even at the patrol level before we forward them to the detectives. People years ago when I was growing up, you had to worry about securing your front door. Now you have to worry about securing your bank account online, your personal records, and so there's so much more than just buying a house alarm. So really, the biggest ones we get all the time that have to do with thefts and stolen property, Craigslist sales, one of those sort of buyer beware. If you see a good deal on Craigslist, it's probably a stolen item. So, you know, we have to be careful about that. We get responding to those crimes all the time where the person has forked over $400 for an iPhone and I have to take it away and seize it for evidence because it's been stolen. And so they're out the $400 and it's a real pain for them. But one interesting case I went to not long ago was a really, really concerned mom who had gotten some phone calls from another country. And I alluded to it earlier, but this man was calling for her 13-year-old daughter. And she sort of intercepted that relationship, which had been going on for about 8 months. And the daughter had been sending explicit pictures, and the male, it actually was in another country, was sending those back and forth, and it really gotten out of control. So the mom sort of leaps into all this information, just having no idea that it was going on. So that's pretty straining on that relationship. And then not only does it have to do now with talking to the police, but then getting counseling for her daughter. And so it's just very straining for a family to have that sort of breach of security.
One of the thoughts that comes to my mind is, does a 13-year-old understand the risk before this, all her mother reported it? Was she aware and just doing some risky behavior, or really oblivious to the risk?
Well, if you've had children, and especially female children, 13, 10, 11, 12, those are tough ages. You're sort of going from that elementary coddled age to this place where you're in middle school and you're figuring out who you are. And a lot of times these girls want attention, and sometimes they'll get it anywhere. And so they get caught up in something. Let's just give an example of Instagram. And let's say they accidentally or unbeknownst to them leave their account open. They're posting sort of not knowingly pictures of themselves to who they think are their friends, and maybe someone's friended them, but they're profile is not secure, so that person's been able to see all their posts. All of a sudden, then they get compliments. And as a 13-year-old girl in middle school or going into high school, you know, it's flattering on one hand. And if you haven't had that discussion, that very frank discussion with parents, and nobody's monitoring that, you begin to build those type of feelings, those relationships with people that maybe you didn't know at all. So I've been talking to my daughter about this issue since she could talk, and talking about, yeah, it looks like your friend Susan, but it could be a guy from Alabama sitting on his beanbag chair in his basement. Mm-hmm. And just having those frank discussions and then monitoring that as a parent is just huge.
So there's two issues, what I heard you saying, is there's this susceptibility of adolescence anyway, but there's a naivete about what's really could be happening to this, related to this conversation, what it's all about.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's scary mm-hmm. to get in deep to that and then not know how to get out, too.
Yeah, it makes me think we're all kind of naive about the internet. I mean, I don't think the internet is particularly safe, but I suspect a lot of people think it's safer than it probably really is. Can we talk about that issue just a little bit for us teenage adults who...
Certainly. I'd like to just piggyback on what Angie was talking about. Some of the investigations that our unit's been involved in have been really revealing as to the level of predation or the type of predators that are on the internet. Mm. And those are folks that actually study psychological methodology of how to communicate with youngsters, capitalizing on that naivety mm-hmm. that you're talking about. So we have arrested folks from all socioeconomic groups, from a pediatrician that traveled the world dealing with children in foreign countries, as well as our own, for over 50 years before he was caught. Mm. We've arrested business folks. We've arrested folks that spend a great deal of time training themselves on how to communicate with young people. So it is absolutely imperative that adults, concerned adults and parents, have those frank conversations with our children and stay involved like Angie is with her children's lives and kind of regulate the ability they have to utilize the internet. Some of the suggestions we make for parents and adults is to have your devices only allow your children to have internet access in certain places in the home where you can monitor them, like a common living area, and not in a bedroom where they have Wi-Fi access and nobody can monitor. Because these are the types of folks that are out there, and they're absolutely targeting children, and there's a tremendous number of them. We do not have nationally, or actually internationally, the law enforcement ability to target these folks because they're so prolific. So that's why your program, sir, is mm-hmm. very, very good, because crime prevention is the biggest thing we can offer. And that crime prevention, if we can educate adults and parents on, just have those frank conversations with children. Sometimes they're uncomfortable. Sometimes you may have to take the device. We recommend that you get the password for all their devices. And particularly if you've been hands-off for a while, that could be challenging with a teenager, because there's a lot of private stuff in there, and maybe it's not that big a deal, but maybe it really is. And sometimes, you know, if you seize that device and say, you know, I'll give it back when I get the password, you'll get the password. But it gives you a good insight into their level of sophistication and what they're utilizing that device to do. And it absolutely takes that type of parental involvement to protect our children.
I want to come back to the overall safety of the internet, but before we get there, you made me think of another question that I had earlier, is who's responsible for consequences when you use an app, let's just say an app at this point. And again, we may have to define that from a safety standpoint for everybody, like instant messages and so forth, that if something were to happen untowards to someone who's using that as a result of some of the privacy issues there, does the app maker or people who are distributing these things have any responsibility?
That's a good question. And again, they'll put a lot of that responsibility on the user, and they put that in the disclaimer whenever you download that free app. It's all that language that people don't read and just click through because they can't wait to get the app on their phone. But they do have some consequences, and we find that many of the, for example, software manufacturers, operating system manufacturers actually have partnered with law enforcement in trying to write code that makes it gives law enforcement the ability to recover data if it's used for criminal means. So, for example, Microsoft holds an annual conference where they work with law enforcement forensic technicians and investigators and incorporate their ideas in their next version of Windows to try and assist law enforcement. And there's a lot of large organizations out there that have a great social comp, you know, they believe that they should help out socially, and they're trying to make our environment safer and better for children.
They do give us some, as law enforcement officials, they give us a lot of help, and that's sort of what he's alluding to is people don't realize, but parents can talk to their kids about this and let them know that message you just sent might go away. It might disappear after you sent it, after a few seconds, a video, a picture, whatever. But in reality, that's all saved. And to sort of have that discussion with your child and say, you know, you want to be secret and you want to be private and you might be from me, but if something goes bad, all of this data can be mined by the Anchorage Police Department or other departments around the nation. So it gives parents a tool to speak with their children about how not private those types of messages are, especially on those apps.
So that was something that I just wrote down is what I wrote down is how is personal information obtained. But really what you just told me is how it's obtained is everything that happens in those apps, everything that happens on the internet, you tell me if I'm wrong here, is stored somewhere and therefore it's accessible by somebody forever, theoretically.
Theoretically, that's true in a large percentage of situations. Right. And, you know, there may be... nothing is absolute in the internet. We have lots of bright people around the world who are writing code and writing software to undo security measures that big corporations put into their products. Mm-hmm. And many times they're successful very, very quickly after that product hits the market. So anything that's placed online is virtually available forever after that point. You know, I've heard children say, well, I use Snapchat, you know, when I take pictures so that nobody can get them. But the reality is if you send somebody a Snapchat, and do you know how Snapchat works?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay. So Snapchat is an application that folks will use to send images or videos. And after a prescribed amount of time, like maybe 60 seconds, the image will disappear and theoretically is gone from the phone. So So it gives people a feeling of safety in that I'm going to send this image out, but it's going to be gone in 60 seconds. I just want to share it with my good friend. But the reality is if the friend on the other end of the internet isn't that good, they can do a screen capture as soon as the picture pops up. There's all different ways to capture that that image. So, I mean, there's always ways around what we believe to be secure. And, you know, look at all of the instances where criminals have mined our Visa card numbers and credit card numbers, particularly over the holidays the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So,
and I know one thing I've done is I've sent emails. Now, this may sound archaic to people who are listening to the wrong people sometime and wished I hadn't said what I had said in that email. So sometimes the information goes to the wrong person for unexplained reasons or gets forwarded without much thought.
I think some of these apps that parents and citizens out there need to understand are some of the less obvious sites and apps that can be targeting children, and especially those preteen and teen children. You might think of, like, for example, the app Pinterest. People hear about Pinterest for cooking ideas, you know, crafts and things like that. I've been scanning Pinterest for a recipe and some very explicit images pop up. And what people don't realize is that you can tag those as you upload things to these sites. Since there's millions of people uploading worldwide, they can tag whatever they want. So it might be a very explicit image that, you know, your kids can't erase from their memory once they see it. But it might be tagged with a recipe or something innocuous. And so I often talk to parents about something as simple as Pinterest, besides the fact that these like recipe mining sites and things like that, have messaging features. So not only can you create these boards and then message, and so you can really get involved in the social messaging aspect of a site that most parents would say, oh yeah, my 10-year-old looks at Pinterest all the time. So just knowing what those apps are, being familiar with them, and as a parent, no matter how young or old you are, getting on those apps and just really looking at what it is and what the capabilities are so important.
It kind of blows me away just to be thinking we're getting ready to open another office, and we've been looking for ideas, shockingly, that we might go on Pinterest. So that can be, you know, someone could tag that, a picture you would not like to have shared, but can tag it in a way. And the company, Pinterest, may or may not be trying to do something about that. It still may be very difficult to affect it.
Most companies have a good public conscience, and they're trying. Right. They actually have software that scans their site daily, trying to find images like that. And they usually will find them and report them sometimes within hours. But, you know, if you imagine the millions of people that are looking at this website, if it's up for 2 or 3 hours worldwide, how many people have been exposed to this particular image?
All right. We are about halfway through the program. What I want to do now is take our typical mid-break. You'll remind everybody you're listening to Line 1, your health connection. Our local number is 550-8433, 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a very short break, and we'll continue our discussion on what we need to know about kids and being safe on the Internet with Lieutenant Kevin Vandergriff and Officer Angie Fraze of the Alaska Anchorage Police Department. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1, your health connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Line 1, your health connection from KSKA Anchorage and Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Today, my guests are Lieutenant Kevin Vandergriff and Officer Angie Fraze of the Anchorage Police Department. And we're discussing children and adolescent safety while using the Internet. While we were on a break, we brought up the fact that as parents of children, we are very important influences on what normal behavior should be and what expected behavior is. So they both asked me to make sure we mention that how we act as adults, what we do as adults, particularly with the Internet and maybe while texting, while we're driving, are important influences on what we might expect our children to do in return. Angie, you brought that up. Any comments?
Yeah, absolutely. Distracted driving is like the new drunk driving. We see it all the time, and I know probably your listeners and everyone out in our community sees it, you know, as locally as the Glen Highway, someone's swerving all over the road. We think it's a drunk person. You get up next to them, and of course, they're looking down at their phone. So distracted driving, there's all kinds of tests that the National Highway associations have done, but they have found that it's just as, if not more dangerous than drunk driving. Just simply sending one text, you can look down at your phone and drive the length of a football field. And we all know, especially here with the wildlife jumping out at all moments or people making sudden turns in front of you, how devastating that can be by looking away. And people can really get absorbed in their phone to the point that they don't realize the amount of time that goes by when they're scrolling through Facebook or they see that ding on the phone and it's a Facebook message or it's a text message. You know, I'd say as a parent, you just really have to practice what you preach. And I think it's very one of the most scariest things I think about as I think about my child learning how to drive and driving on their own is that phone. Mm-hmm. And as a family, you got to sit down. And I really believe this. You just got to, you know, take that pledge to whatever, lock up the phone in the glove box, turn it off, get that distraction out of there. Because as much as we say we will not look at it, when it goes ding, it's instinct. It's almost, it's very difficult not to.
And I would just add, Angie makes a good point that we should practice what we preach. And police officers are human beings, too. And what we've learned, you'll notice that most police officers have what they call a mobile data computer in their car. And so we receive calls for service. We can actually text other officers with that. We can look up license plates. We can do a tremendous amount of work on there while we're driving. And so after we started using those, we started having some accidents. So there may be citizens out there who say, well, yeah, I've seen people weaving in the road, and it was a police officer. Yeah. So recognizing that, we've actually implemented software that prevents communications from taking place when you're above a certain speed, so that because we as humans, we can't help it. You know, we hear that distraction, we look down, and like Angie says, it only takes a fraction of a second to take your eyes off the road mm-hmm. and create a safety hazard for somebody.
Yeah. I hate to bring up much about healthcare here, but I want to put things in perspective. And we're healthier than we have ever been. Almost everybody knows we're living longer than we've ever lived. But since about the 1980s, I think it is, the most likely reason to end up in an emergency room is not an acute illness, it's an unintentional injury. And when you look at injuries in general, particularly in kids less or people less than 20, car accidents are way up there, despite the fact that since the 50s, there's less people dying on the highway than, despite the fact there's more driving. So driving has gotten safer and safer. So I kind of look at this texting as a blip in the road. I mean, it's unfortunately, I'm sure it's underestimated. It'd be very hard to prove that that is a factor, it would seem to me. Maybe I'm just too naive. Maybe you can figure out what a person was doing on that phone at the time.
It's very difficult. I think they're reporting like 3,500 deaths a year based on distracted driving. But how often do you go to – I used to respond to collisions all the time. How often do I go there and say what happened? They don't say I was texting.
Right.
They say,
right.
You know, I don't know. Something just jumped out. Yeah. So then very few people are going to admit to that.
Yeah, and I guess there is some effort being made by companies and legislatures to really control the use of, like the police department, I guess, has. I wasn't aware of that, but it limits the ability to use them, which makes sense. All right.
And changing the laws, too. We've recently had a law change in the past few years about texting and driving and working those computers while you're driving. And something I was speaking with one of our traffic sergeants about is just as simply as looking at your phone and while you're taking a picture while driving meets that criteria for the law, and it's a misdemeanor. So taking a picture while you're driving, just because you're looking at that video display, can be as simple as committing a misdemeanor on the road. So the legislature is taking it pretty seriously.
I'm a little hesitant to bring this up, but again, it's a medical thing where I give some talks every once in a while, and I'm very interested in how we make decisions and how our minds work. And there's a very famous video of made by a psychologist talking about attention, and there are six girls passing a basketball around, and half of them have black shirts on, half of them have white shirts, and your job is to count the number of passes the girl in the white jerseys do, and you watch this for maybe 30 seconds, and then they ask you what the answer was, and you guess, and then they say, did you see the gorilla? And half the people watching that video don't see a gorilla walk into the middle of the picture, beat his chest, and walk out the other side. And so it's kind of, you know, your mind doesn't automatically able to do two things at once as much as we think. Once you're doing something, and it goes to just talking on the telephone when you're doing things. And I've heard studies and talking about, well, it's different than having two people in the same car because they're both watching. When you're talking on the phone with somebody else, the other person's not watching what's going on, whereas with somebody in the front seat you're talking to is actually. So anyway, there's a lot of science that's gone into this whole issue. And I guess it gets into also, I've heard why motorcyclists get hits, because people aren't looking for motorcyclists. They're looking for pedestrians and they're looking for other cars. You don't think about motorcycles. And even though they're right there, you just flat didn't see them.
Right.
All right. So that's maybe more science than people want to know about this whole issue. But all right. Another thing that I'm interested in a little bit is this information of how information on the internet gets to other people. And I'm aware of something called a cookie. Can somebody tell me what a cookie is and how is that used by companies and how can it get misused, I guess?
I can tell you very generally. It's not something that in law enforcement we're really concerned about. It is a little piece of code that companies will install on your machine if you visit their website. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I'm a fisherman. I like to fish. So if I get on Amazon or I start looking at fishing sites, some of those sites that I go to will install a little cookie that basically will help them advertise to me. And I'll find that the next time I'm online, suddenly I'm getting all these advertisements for, you know, this really cool fishing stuff. And that's a result of these cookies that are enabled on the computer. And you, as a user of your computer, can not allow cookies to be enabled. But it's not something we see in law enforcement that's being utilized in a nefarious way, mostly business and advertising.
So information about individuals' addresses or age or sex and so forth, how's that information obtained?
Well, most of the time, as we see it, you know, I work in the training department now, so we see these recruits coming in. Right now we have 20 recruits in the police academy, and we see it because they're putting it on the internet themselves. They're creating their profiles on Facebook or on Instagram, and they're putting all that personal data in there. I don't know if you've ever been scrolling through Facebook, but you'll see, just exactly like Lieutenant Vandergriff just said, you'll see over on the side where the ads pop up some item that you just searched on Amazon 2 days before. Right. And so they're able to connect you in that way, and it's mind-boggling. But most of the time, we're putting that personal data out there, and it's getting either shared with sites, or you're leaving things open, or you're putting too much information. A lot of things that we do, like in our backgrounds, is part of our background to come to be an Anchorage police officer now, they are searching these social media sites. So another frank discussion I have with my daughter is when you're 13, 14, 15, you might be putting pictures of yourself partying or whatever as you get into college. Remember that when you go for that job interview, that stuff still exists. So putting it out there, knowing it stays out there, but most of the time companies aren't putting it out there about us. We're putting it out there about ourselves.
But you bring up a good point, because there are folks that have written code, software, that goes out and data mines that information. And we believe most of the time it's being used for advertising purposes, but certainly the capability exists to use it for more sinister purposes as well.
We kind of have beaten around the bush about the term sexting and pictures of people that might have taken a picture, intended it for one individual. It may be misused. What are we talking about from a legal standpoint about sexting, and what are the mistakes that kids can make just playing around on the internet?
Well, what we've seen in probably the past 10 years with the proliferation of smartphones that come with a camera is young folks are utilizing them to take images of themselves and, like you said, share them with a friend or a boyfriend or a girlfriend. And unbeknownst to them, what they have been doing is creating child pornography, because those would be images, nude images of sexual genitalia of children under 18. And by texting them or emailing them, they're inadvertently distributing child pornography, which are felony-level crimes. And so, you know, 10 years ago, that was the only criminal statute we had to deal with those types of issues. But what we've realized is, you know, young people, their brains aren't fully developed, they're adventurous, they're trying out this new technology, and they're sending these images out there. And a new law was established actually by the legislature last year with regard to sexting and making it a misdemeanor crime so that we can mm-hmm. utilize that to try and combat right. it. But mostly it's education, I think. Right. Young folks are going to make mistakes as part of growing up in the, you know, maturing process. And we as parents need to emphasize to them that those images that they've sent out there can be used in a number of, you know, ways which, as Angie has said, you know, can come back and hurt them later when they're trying to get into that good college or they're trying to get that scholarship. And that scholarship team is searching social media network to try and get a picture of the whole person concept of this applicant, and suddenly some of these images, you know, may pop up. So
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the fact. I guess that schools can do that. They can search social media. I guess nowadays you can put somebody's name in the internet and find out all kinds of information about them, some of which may have nowhere near the truth necessarily.
Correct.
I want to come back to this truth issue just a second, because I think there's an internet education awareness of what's real and what's not real and what you can trust and what you can't trust, which is an important issue. But let me give our email address out again. It's line1@alaskapublic.org. If you've got questions or comments about internet safety for children and adolescents or something you've heard today, you can email us. We'll be here for another about 15 minutes or so. That's line1@alaskapublic.org, or you can call us at 550-8433, 550-8433. And I think one more time I'll give our toll-free number as well, 1-888-353-5752. Along the same line of, I'm struggling with the word understanding of what's real and what's not real on the internet is, when I was looking at some of the Academy of Pediatrics websites, they brought up that there are sites that promote actually bulimia, anorexia, things that can be very dangerous, self-racism. There's lots of inaccurate and dangerous medical information being on the internet. And it's sometimes surprising to me some of the things I read. It's like you can put anything on there. I would guess that the police department is not very involved in that. This is probably more of a federal interstate trade kind of issue, but I'm not sure of the right term. Or are you more involved in that?
We haven't been that involved. We're aware of some of those sites, and whenever we speak with parents who are concerned about their children visiting those sites and getting information, we just encourage them to talk with their medical provider and get the information firsthand versus trusting something on the internet, unless it comes from, you know, a site that the AMA or something like that.
What about bullying, cyberbullying? Bullying's become a huge issue. It's definitely a medical issue affecting people's self-esteem and can lead them to do some things to themselves or to others. Is that something that the Anchorage Police Department can get involved in at times?
It is. There's actually a new law that came out last year that deals with cyberbullying and the harassment involved. When somebody uses the internet to try and provoke or harass somebody, either with words or language or images. And it's probably a bigger problem for our young people today, I think, than sexting. I think most kids recognize the dangers of sexting, and it's not as prevalent as the cyberbullying that we're seeing and getting and having reported to us from schools and from parents. And it's interesting. Some of the statistics from a survey is a little outdated. It was from 2009 that talked about cyberbullying, but about 60% of our cyberbullies are female, adolescent females versus the males. So some of the ads you'll see about cyberbullying that feature a male are kind of a little bit off kilter. So that's something that I think as a society we have a little bit of difficulty maybe believing or understanding. And so when we talk to our children, we may put more emphasis on the males because we figure they're the ones that are involved. And that's really not the case.
Right. Well, I think that a lot of parents, they want to protect their kids. So they're leaning towards, how is my kid being cyberbullied? I think we have to admit to ourselves that it's possible that our kids might be the ones being the bully. And all it is saying something online that you wouldn't necessarily say to someone when you saw them in the grocery store. And it, over time, it leads to that bullying. It's not the one or two comments here or there, but a lot of times it can lead to very humiliating cyber shaming, something that maybe someone, you know, was embarrassed about at school, and then all of a sudden for months and months, you know, there's someone that's bullying someone about that. And so having those discussions with your kids about what they're saying online, they should never be saying anything to their friends online that they wouldn't say in person, or they wouldn't want it broadcast over the PA system at their school. So it can very easily be our precious little kids that are the ones being the bully. So as from a patrol level at the Anchorage Police Department, we respond to a lot of these reports. parents who finally were told by their child that this has been going on for months and are able to see the things that have been said to their child over months and months and months. We definitely get involved in those type of cases. Depending on the level of the threats, if there are threats that are made, there can be criminal charges that come out of those things. And there are a lot of resources. While we work with the school resource officers who are in the schools, they're in elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools as well. They're responsible for all levels of schools. They can really do a good job being out there communicating with the principals, the teachers, the kids to sort of nip this, you know, at the very start instead of letting it get out of control.
What age group? Is there an age group that this happens, the cyberbullying, more than not? You said females more than males.
About 60-40, females over males. Uh-huh. And it starts around preteens, 12, 13 years old, and it tends to go up from the statistics to about age 17, 16 and 17-year-olds maybe engaging more in cyberbullying than the younger children. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that we've seen in our investigations at the Anchorage Police Department are, I mean, pretty disturbing. Some of the comments made, horrible, horrible comments to young folks that have impacted them and, you know, caused them to make decisions in their lives that are very traumatic.
Right. How about racism? Is that an issue, or is that go under the same kind of envelope as cyberbullying?
Honestly, we have not worked a case, in my recollection, that deals with young people and cyberbullying involving racism.
Okay.
Usually it's just hatred or being mean-spirited to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you set up through 16, 17, 18, it surprised me. I would think that by the time you're 16, 17, 18, you know that this can be found out. I would think it'd be a junior high issue more. So that was a little surprising to me. We have a caller. Ian, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Yeah, it's just a quick comment. Kind of ironic that, you know, as we drive, we're not supposed to be having our cell phones or anything, and yet the police have this full-screen computer on right at their fingertips, and I know the reason that they need it, but you can catch them every once in a while as they're driving down the road, working on the computer and driving at the same time.
But Ian, we've kind of touched on that again. I'm going to ask Lieutenant Vandergriff to make his comments about that, because I think you're exactly right, but there's also been efforts made to control that.
Yeah, Ian, you bring up a good point. Police officers are susceptible to distractions while driving, particularly with that mobile data computer we have in the vehicles. And we noticed that over the last couple of years since they've been installed, and actually had purchased software for our department and had it installed last year in all the vehicles, which effectively negates the computer's ability to talk to the officer or send the officer messages or allow the officer to send messages when they're above a certain speed. So we recognize that as a problem, just like you did, and we're taking steps to try and improve our performance.
Cool. I mean, I wasn't trying to make a big issue out of it. You know, I knew I support the police and everything that they do, and I thank you for all your work that you do for us. And it was just one of those ironic little things.
Understood, and we appreciate your support, sir.
All right. Have a great day.
Thanks for your call, Ian. Before we came on the air, you wanted to mention a particular resource that individuals who may be listening that you think is a particular one. I want to also remind everybody, if you went to alaskapublic.org and looked at the Line 1 link, then today's program, we also have some links, but this is one that Lieutenant Vandergriff thought was particularly important.
Yes, thank you. We highly recommend to any concerned adult, parents, educators, anybody that wants to share information with young people about the dangers of the internet, a website called netsmarts.org, netsmarts.org. And there's a tremendous amount of resources there. So for parents, for example, they have a bunch of tip sheets. So if you want to know how to talk to your teen about smartphone safety, there's a tip sheet that helps walk you through it. If you're an educator and you want to do an internet safety presentation for your preschool or kindergarten class, there's resources to do that. For example, they'll have PowerPoint presentations already put together and with talking points for you. And they do that for every age group all the way up through high school. So if you're a parent that has questions about a new website or new social media or just some app that you see on your child's phone and you're going, what the heck is that? And you Google it and you don't get enough information that you think you need to make a wise decision about it, you can ask the experts at NetSmarts about that particular app, and somebody will research it and get back with you and share that information with you. So a tremendous resource available to all of us to use.
Another thing that I haven't brought up, and maybe again it's my age and lack of understanding, but we certainly hear about viruses from an international standpoint. But I know that I have a lot of virus software on my computer from at a business standpoint. We have some at home, I suspect. But what about kids and understanding what the hazards of downloading information off the internet is? That's something we haven't specifically talked about. Is it an issue that we should talk about?
Well, I think so. I think that's just a topic of conversation adults can have with children about exploring on the internet and going to websites and talking to them about some code that those folks might try to instill on your machine. And it's a very real threat. Most of the time, the blockers and the software that we buy for our home computers does a good job of catching that information, but many times it does not. And young folks who are curious and traveling around the internet inadvertently run into some of those sites that we'll try to utilize your machine. So, for example, we talked a little bit about cookies. It's kind of a similar concept. If you go to a website that isn't what it appears to be, they can try and insert code onto your machine that maybe captures some of your machine's capability. Mm-hmm. And if they do that over the course of thousands of machines, they create a computing capability that they can use for their criminal enterprises. So those are very real threats. We don't see those as much in our unit, but we know that they're out there.
I've kind of avoided the sexual predation thing. I think everybody's aware of that, but I was a little bit shocked again when you told me to the extreme with which individuals out there might go to try to understand how kids are thinking and finding those at risk. Can we say a little bit more before we get into our final recommendations here, just to underline this probably, I guess, one of the most worrisome threats?
It's unfortunate that it's such a prolific issue in our society. Any person could assume the persona of a child and go online into any of these different chat platforms that are being utilized by children and immediately be confronted by adults that want to talk to them explicitly about sex and even want to meet them to have sex. For example, we've worked numerous cases. We don't have enough resources to work the cases that we could work, which is why we're really excited about public education to try and prevent children from getting into these circumstances. But in one particular case, we went online. One of the investigators in our office was a 14-year-old girl, goes online, immediately confronted by half a dozen men that want to talk explicitly about sex. One of them wants to meet her and her girlfriend for sex. So I became the girlfriend, went online as a 14-year-old, and in two 20-minute chats, we end up meeting this person in our community here in Anchorage and placed him under arrest. It is very, very prolific, and I can't overemphasize enough for parents to be involved in the type of activities that their children are involved in online. It really takes parental controls to try and keep our kids safe.
I guess that just really, really surprises it's, me.
It's disturbing.
It opens a larger group of at-risk individuals to that possibility than it used to be. But the internet makes it so everybody available, almost, to someone who wants to do harm to somebody else. Angie, we're getting close to the end here. You're a mom. What's your advice to other parents? having the perspective of a police officer as well.
Yeah, I'd just say exactly what you guys have been talking about. It's, you know, those people are out there. Again, we don't have to just lock our front doors anymore. We have to protect our kids from being in these relationships that can start really small and really harmless at first, and they can lead to somewhere very, very dangerous, as dangerous as somebody kicking in your front door and you know, taking advantage of your small children. That's really what this is. So I'd say, first of all, you know, get those parental controls after you educate yourself and you acknowledge that this is a possibility for your lovely children. Acknowledge that they could be victims. Educate yourself about it. Talk to your friends. Talk to your friends who have kids of the same level or even maybe a little bit older. Ask them what they've been through. Sometimes it's embarrassing to say that, you know, your child's been a victim or has been, you know, perpetrated or targeted, but we need to share those experiences. We need to get online. We need to get on our phones and get on those apps. We need to be friends with our kids on these social media. We can have these great rules, but I've seen it from a patrol level. You know, these calls come in from kids on Facebook, and the parents, when I contact the parents, they say, well, I've taken away their phone, I've taken away their computer, there's no way they could be on Facebook. Well, they are. They've gone to school, they've borrowed someone's Facebook, they've logged in under their own profile. They're gonna get it. We have to just be involved in it. Talk about it, be involved on it, in it, and just realize that if we don't know, you know, it can hurt us.
Last minute.
I would highly encourage utilizing, you know, a lot of organizations in the community ask APD to come and talk about this very topic. And we have a very limited staff, and we really want to keep them working cases so we can put some of these folks in jail and hold them accountable for their actions. So we try to get out and do as many educational pieces as we can on internet safety for children, but I would highly recommend NetSmarts. If we can't come out and teach at your school or your organization, there are PowerPoints there that you can utilize as an educator to share the same information with the group that you hope to get the message to.
And let me just also remind everybody once again, you can always go to line one at alaskapublic.org, that's our email address, to alaskapublic.org, and look up the line one internet a link and find our archive and listen to this program, or recommend that your children, as for that matter, listen to the program at their convenience. It'll be there. And if they're so inclined, they can also go to iTunes. Sometimes it takes a couple of days. Put in the word Line One under your search, and you'll get this program as well, if you'd like to have them listen to it in that way. My thanks to our guest today, Lieutenant Kevin Vandergriff and Officer Angie Fraser of the Anchorage Police Department. I appreciate your time and expertise. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
If you'd like to continue the conversation on children and adolescent and safe use of the Internet, you can join KSKA on Facebook. You can find the link on our website, alaskapublic.org, where you can also find our Line 1 archives. Rick Meistrom is 71 years old and has had insulin-dependent type 1 diabetes for 51 years without complications. He wants to help others achieve this success with diabetes. So next week, the ex-mayor, Rick Meistrom, and I will discuss diabetes on Line 1, Your Health Connection. That'll be Monday, July 6th at 2 p.m. on FM 91.1. Pat Yak is our chief content officer at Alaska Public Media. Dave Waldron was our engineer today. Monica Goki is our web editor. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.